the calling the executive committee meeting to order at 8:30 a.m. on May 19th, 2022. I'm Terry Hollingsworth, chair of the Orange County Workforce Development Board, and we're calling the meeting to order. So why don't we begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, right hand over your heart. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Board member roll call.
Terry Hollingsworth.
Present.
John Luker.
Present.
Annalisa Lukes. And Barbara Mason. I believe you were muted, Barbara. But Barbara,
present.
Thank you. And that is quorum chair.
Great, thank you. Public comment.
We did not receive any requests to speak, and we do not have any members of the public present this morning.
Okay, great, thank you. Moving on to action item number five, apprenticeship policy. Karma?
Yes, I had to unmute.
Right.
Good morning, everyone. So we are requesting the review and approval of the apprenticeship policy. This policy was taken first to the youth committee and then to the one-stop committee for consideration. Both committees voted and approved. We also took this policy to the business services committee because it impacts them as well. So all three committees approved the recommendation to take it up to the executive and then for executive to consider taking it up to the full board. Just a quick reminder, the apprenticeship policy allows us to enter into non-traditional apprenticeship opportunities with businesses in the Orange County community. It also establishes how we'll pay for certain aspects of the apprenticeship, as well as developing pre-apprenticeship programs. We did not have an apprenticeship policy prior to this one, so it was very difficult. If there was an opportunity to create an apprenticeship, it would have been very difficult to deliver it because we didn't have a foundation of how it would be delivered. Now that we have this policy, we can confidently go into conversations with businesses in Orange County and develop them. As of right now, there are no apprenticeships in Orange County at all. And our desire is to develop apprenticeships. I think you guys have all seen that legislation, even the governor's revised budget includes a heavy component towards apprenticeships, not traditional apprenticeships. And so we want to position ourselves to be able to deliver that service. So I'm asking for this committee to consider voting on this opportunity to take it up to the full board for consideration and approval.
This is Barbara from the One Stop. We unanimously approved it. We all thought it was good and it was overdue, actually, incoming.
Same with you, committee. I'll motion to approve.
Okay. So if there are no questions.
Second.
Oh, okay. So we have, all right. So we've done the motion. John, was that you
who? Yes.
Okay. And then Barbara seconded. Okay.
Correct.
All right. Desiree, do we need to?
Yes.
Okay.
Terry Hollingsworth.
Approved.
John Luker.
Approved.
Annalisa Lukes is not present. And Barbara Mason?
Approved.
That is majority.
Great. Motion accepted. All right. Moving on to item number six, events policy and attachment one.
Yes. So this policy was presented to the Youth Committee and the One Stop Committee. The intent of this policy is to establish the requirements or parameters around our service providers engaging with the community on our behalf. So often our service providers attend conferences, meetings, training, or events in the community representing us, and we're not aware of it. So on more than one occasion, there's been situations where it's caused a little bit of confusion with the community, with the difference of the Workforce Development Board versus the One Stop Center versus the service providers, like who we are, how do we work together? And in many times they don't, because outside people still don't really know who we are, there's confusion about what we do, who we are, and how they work with us. And so this policy allows us to establish the parameters of for our service providers of when they go out in the community to notify us. Now, we'd like for advance notice when possible, but short notice, we're even asking for short notice in this policy and establishing the criteria for providing us notice so that we're aware of it. So both committees reviewed it and voted for approval. So I'd like to ask the executive committee to consider a vote to move it up to the full board for approval.
Again, on this one, we were in full agreement. We actually felt it was overdue as well, and that there should be a lot more transparency and communication in this area. So Mason moved to approve.
Youth committee felt the same. I'll second.
Terry Hollingsworth.
Approved.
John Luker.
Approved.
Annalisa Lukes is not present. And Barbara Mason.
Approved.
And that is majority chair.
Okay, great. Motion accepted. All right. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, we have the information section, Business Services Committee.
So I'll speak on behalf of Annalisa since she's not here today. So at the Business Service Committee, we reviewed some performance metrics. We reviewed the work of Rhonda and her unit in terms of serving businesses in the community. We discussed the OJT grant, the National Dislocated Worker OJT grant, and that we surrendered the funding back to the state because we weren't able to make performance. We also discussed just strategies to bring awareness to the community that business services is available in Orange County and how to connect with them. Overall, the meeting was mostly about performance. Where are we going and what do we plan to do to move forward? There were no action items directly related to the Business Service Committee and no areas of issues established by that committee that I think need to be mentioned.
All right, any questions regarding business services? Okay, no action required for this one. So I think we're good there. Can move on to the youth committee report.
Yeah, Carmen, is someone gonna just walk through those two items on performance or?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Overall, the committee has met and continued to meet and reviewed performance. I mean, overall, I think across the board with COVID, I think everyone's been disappointed with the numbers. I know Carmen, the team has been working with everyone to kind of improve those. And so just hopefully as things are starting to loosen up, hopefully those numbers will improve. But yeah, do you want to go through those reports?
John, the only other thing I want to mention is that the discussion that we had about paper performance and that the team has agreed to go back and come up with some paper performance strategies to present to the committee for consideration.
Yeah.
Right. Just had a question. I was just trying to find the page.
Starts on 38.
Okay. Okay. So, In this case, if I can, thank you. I'm looking at the contract period, which is from July 1 of 2021 to July 31st of 2022, which is coming up. We had a contracted goal of 114. In this first quarter, 8 enrollees with a total year to date of 23. So where does that leave? I mean, being that we're nearing the end of that contract period, what happens?
So the service providers underperformed at that time. So let's take two steps back. So under this procurement, the procurement was designed for the service provider to have a contract with us that extends 3 additional years, so 4 years total, right? This is the last year for this upcoming year, 2023 is the last year under this procurement. So after this procurement, we need to re-procure. And that's part of that conversation that we had with John about, do we want to create a paper performance procurement next go around, right? because we don't like these numbers. So here's where it leads us. It leads us underperformed in our community. Now, I've had a conversation with La Habra about strategies moving forward on how to pick up these numbers. We can't use COVID as the answer anymore. And if staffing's an issue, then we need to address it. Now, they did have a major staffing challenge. The manager that they had over the program for many years, he's stepped down. And as a result of him stepping down, I do see some changes happening that are in a positive way. Mm-hmm. So I am optimistic that La Habra will pick up. We are looking to expand our one stop. So, you know, we're working on that South County location, which they'll have youth there. We've asked them to put youth in the Garden Grove, their youth program in the Garden Grove location. And if we get this Brea office, we'll have them put youth there. So we're helping them to expand their footprint. I'm also encouraging them to go out and have conversations with the cities and engage with them. La Habra is a city, and sometimes working with other cities may be a challenge because there's some competition. And so what I've asked them to do is when you go out, you're not representing the city of La Habra, you're representing Ready, Settle, See, and only use Ready, Settle, See language. Because I do think that when you go out and say, I'm with the city of La Habra and I wanna do a program in your community, it probably puts up walls, right? Mm-hmm. But if I say I'm a Ready, Settle, See program and I'd like to expand to your community, different kind of message. So I've talked to them about that. We talked about marketing collateral, our outreach strategy. We'll see how this next year goes, but like I said, this is up for procurement again.
Yeah. You know, and I'm just reflecting back on, you know, again, the conference where we had that discussion regarding outreach strategies and, you know, what was offered by several other workforce development boards from the West Coast is, you know, in all reality, workforce development boards need to have a presence within the schools, you know. Would there be an opportunity for us to set up an office in some of the local schools?
Probably not. However, Kathy Boyd, so we had a conversation with Kathy Boyd, and I think that that's the first step is by mm-hmm. working directly with her. So there was a situation, and I'm just going to be honest, she'll tell you herself, where the previous manager met with Kathy Boyd and she was giving him some ideas. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he received them well. Like, I don't think that he didn't receive them well. I'll just say that, right? So now that he's gone, and I went back to La Habra and the city manager for La Habra and said, hey, we had Kathy Boyd giving him firsthand connection to her school system and an opportunity to do more programming. The city manager seemed shocked that that happened and that opportunity was kind of ignored. Mm-hmm. So I think the first step is really get into the schools. The challenge with doing the schools is that you don't want too many in-school youth. Remember, WIOA works like this. 75% of our funding has to be spent on out-of-school youth. Only 25% of our funding can be spent on in-school youth. So putting us in schools you'll end up serving more in-school youth, which will be a compliance finding, right? Right. Our focus under WIO is supposed to be those opportunity youth, those youth that have dropped out of high school or not attending college that need to get back on track because we just want to guide them before they get to be 30 years old and still trying to figure it out, right? So the intention is really to focus on those opportunity youth that have not figured it out more than the in-school youth. The in-school youth are still connected and engaged with the education system. So that's why 25% can only be spent on that population. So that's why I say no. No, because you don't want to create unbalance, but you do need to be connected. So you need to be connected so that school can give you a pipeline for both populations, but you don't want to necessarily put it in school. Here's another problem. So La Habra has had an in-school program for many years, and that's, in my opinion, a problem. Because if I'm a school, I'm not going to go to other schools because they're my competition. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's hindering our program. Now, I've talked to them about them. They don't think that it's an issue. But I kind of do, because if you're operating, they operate a John Muir school on their campus, and a lot of their in-school kids are their John Muir students, right? Well, if I'm at, I don't know, San Juan Capistrano, I don't know, somewhere else, San Clemente, somewhere else, I'm not going to go to this John Muir school, right? This program, right? So they need to figure out how to connect with those kids. And my strategy for that was through Kathy Boyd, because she's in the Department of Education. She supports all K through 12 throughout the entire county. That's where we need to connect so that she can help us get the foot in the door. But somehow we need to separate that John Muir school from our WIOA youth program. I hope all that made sense.
Right. Yeah. I understand. So it sounds like perhaps, well, let me ask, do you feel that the counselors, at least, I mean, because they would be the individual that would be able to connect with those out of school youth. Do you feel that they are knowledgeable enough about WEAL?
No, we need to do a bit. Our service provider needs to do a better job of getting in front of every single one of those school counselors, introducing themselves, talking about what the program can do for their communities. Mm-hmm. I do think that they need to do that better. I also think that there's a large population in Irvine of these college students that are living in their car. That's a big population of out of school. Like when they did, let me take 2 steps back. The state did a report on opportunity youth, and they found that Santa Ana, Irvine, and I believe Anaheim had the largest population of disconnected youth. And when we say youth, it's from 14 to 24, right? So that's a lot of kids just in one community, but they put that Irvine was a major issue for Orange County. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, we're not connected to UCI and the schools that are all connected to that to support those kids that are living out of their car and that are homeless.
Yeah, right.
So I just feel like, I don't know if it's because, I don't know exactly what the reason is. Part of me thinks that it might be because I'm La Habra City, mm-hmm. and I'm going out having a conversation with Irvine City. Is Irvine City going to have warm and open arms to another city coming to them? Or should I go out and represent as Ready, Settle, See, go to Irvine City and talk about how Ready, Settle, See can support them, how at UCI talk about Ready, Settle, See and not about the city of La Habra, because I do think that it sounds like jurisdiction kind of challenges, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I understand. And John, I know you're leading, the committee on this, but another thought or suggestion that was raised at the conference was connecting with the police departments, their public information officers, because if these kids are out of school, you know, perhaps they might have a run-in with law enforcement. And if we can arm law enforcement with the information regarding, you know, the youth program, that will give them an opportunity to perhaps refer some of these kids to the programs that are out of school. So I think we have a lot of opportunity here. We just need to come up with a strategy, to connect with these youth that are out of school.
So this is the in-school slide. You have the out-of-school slide, just to look at those numbers.
Yeah, Desiree, can you scroll to the next screen, page 39? So still some challenges. If there are over 3 million people in Orange County, I'd have to believe that of that 3 million people, probably 25 to 30% of that 3 million are youth, if not more. So that means that there are probably over, 3,400,000-something thousand, 300,000 to 400,000 opportunity youth in Orange County. That's a lot of youth to touch, right? But we're not even scratching the surface because we got about 144 and 105. We really should be at 1,000 a youth a year, mm-hmm. if not more.
Yeah. And, you know, that reminds me of that. There was a program, the Southern Nevada Workforce Development Board has developed a counselor fellowship program. It's a immersive program, a 9-month program. And I believe they were able to access grant funding to really provide training to these counselors about the services of, the workforce development boards and so that they were equipped to be able to provide information to both students that are in school and out of school. So I think we have an opportunity there to make a difference.
Terry, mm-hmm. when you go out into these conferences, you'll hear that other workforce boards aren't using just WEAL money. So on average, most workforce systems, WEAL is only 10% of their money, like 10%. That means that they've gotten philanthropic dollars and other resources to pay for their program, which means that they can be a lot more creative in how to do things, right? We are limited because all we have is WEOA. We don't have other programs or other resources. So I'm bounded by what I can do with WEOA. So I kind of want to remind you of that. That's part of the problem when we look at other workforce areas, cities, like they have money from other sources. And
Are we allowed to take money from other sources?
Well, good question. So I have to go to the Board of Supervisors and ask for permission to. So it depends on, it's up to their discretion of whether or not they want to accept it.
Okay.
Well, it might be up to the provider too. The provider may be able to bring in resources as well, right?
Yes. Yep. Some providers come with resources or in kind. That's correct.
Right. I mean, one of the issues, I mean, we have the city of Havre at our site at Orangewood Foundation, and we have a lot of kids. We serve hundreds and hundreds of these kids. And, you know, a lot of these kids, for whatever reason, are not ready for these programs either. They're really not looking to, you know, they want a job, but they don't necessarily want some of these types of services and to be ready to be committed to the type of, you know, reporting and the different things that we're required to do underneath these programs. So it's unfortunate. We work with a lot of these kids and they're kind of in this rut of, you know, going to taking one class and then working a little bit at a fast food place and then getting government assistance for these other things and just kind of eking by. And they're, for whatever reason, seem kind of complacent in that place. Not all of them, but there are quite a few. So it's a challenge. It's not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll continue to follow this, and I'm sure the work the youth committee will continue to focus on outreach efforts. And I have to admit, I'm still not clear on the fine line that separates outreach from marketing and promotion. I raised that question, and when I got responses back at the conference, it sounded like marketing and promotion to me. You know, so I don't know what the difference is.
If you can't use the word marketing promotion, so you have to call it outreach, and it can't be collateral. So like the fine line is collateral. And I think a lot of people get in trouble because they buy these like pencils and pens and they have their organization name on it. And it doesn't say WIOA or AJCC. That's where people get in trouble, is they don't know how to keep it where it's branded according to the law. Right. And so that's where most people get in trouble, is they buy these book bags and these sweaters and t-shirts and they call it, you know, outreach, but that's not. That's where it's a real fine line. It really is.
But we could under the name of outreach engage in perhaps here's another strategy that was offered would be a social media influencer, someone who's gone through the program and talked about their experience.
Possibly. So we are working with the EDD on that right now, because I know another workforce area that got in trouble for buying Facebook. They called it ads, but the thing is, it was outreach, because how else, like, so what happens is somebody logs into Facebook and they say they're interested in a job. Well, then that workforce area would have came up, right? I just feel like the state needs to get on board on how you connect with people these days. You don't connect with them going door to door anymore. It is social media, and you do have to buy social media ads or placements in order for you to get to the top of the list so people can see you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a fine line.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, very good. Anything else here?
Not on the youth committee. Just know that the youth committee is going to be exploring that next procurement, whether or not to go for pay for performance or performance based, or back to just a cost reimbursement. Okay. So they're going to be considering that. And when we do the procurement, I'm also going to ask them to consider to do multiple procurements, meaning that let's do one for a service provider to do just regular WIOA programming for youth, but then let's do one for special populations so that maybe there's smaller contracts with different providers that focus on unique populations.
Right. And just as an action item for the future, I would like to explore, accepting other, you know, forms of funding. I don't know how that might work, but you're right. I did hear from other workforce development boards that they have this philanthropic side to them that allows them to do things that the WIOA money will not.
Oh, yeah.
So I think there might be an opportunity there. Hopefully we could, address that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Great. All right, so moving on to One Stop Oversight Committee.
Okay, so we have, and it's been kind of a recurring challenge where we have a 2-hour meeting, we have an aggressive agenda, and we spend well over the first hour just going through the performance in the one-stops, because we're really trying to digest and get our arms around disappointing numbers, still struggling with this recurring theme. And maybe it goes to what you were just talking about, karma, of needing to get our arms around being more modern. We keep trying to, it feels like we keep trying to force people into an old formula of getting them to go into a one-stop brick and mortar, which either one, they weren't doing for COVID, or two, it isn't their way they operate anymore, and not really embracing virtual options. And so I think each time in this last year, we spend so much time on just trying to get through those and asking a lot of questions, not really ever getting satisfied. And then we realize we only got like 40 minutes to go and we have to race through the rest. But in synopsis, there is some improvement compared to, I think, 2 cycles ago where it was really not good. There is some improvement, but not where we want it to be. I really think we need to more aggressively look at the virtual options. On a positive note, Karma's team has listened. We've asked for more reports that roll up, which I think you'll see in the board meeting, that are more executive style, and also highlight the placements in those strategic career areas we've identified, like healthcare, IT. And so we do have some very nice reports that were provided. It shows some progress in some of the areas. IT remains a challenge. I think we do need to keep our eye on that one. In some areas, there was some progress, but not at the figures we would want to see placements in IT, because that is a growing area. There was some in healthcare and a little in tourism and services. So I think there has been progress there. Some disappointment with a service provider report on improvement plans for the one-stops. It was presented. We were unanimously not happy. It was not adequate to be called a plan. And so we kicked it back. Unfortunately, we were hoping it would be ready to take to the board, and it's not. And so we told them to go back and really create a plan. Not just some bullets that really didn't describe how or the details. So that was a disappointing part. But overall, I think we did see some progress, but not the levels we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Karma, I think that's about it.
No, you did a great job. The only thing that we didn't talk about that I just learned since our last meeting is that one of our staff members, Anthony Rafik, was nominated for CWA's Champion of the Workforce Champion of the Year. So next week at the CWA conference, Anthony will be awarded on Thursday at a luncheon. So I just wanted to share that with you. I didn't get that information until later, and I'll be sending that information out to the full board, and I'll of course send.
Well, congrats! That's terrific.
Yeah, it is pretty terrific. So I just wanted to share that with you guys as an update. He didn't get to do his presentation, but he has done a phenomenal job with our VEAP program. To be honest with you, if you look at the numbers in the short period of time that we've had that VEAP program, we have enrolled and placed more people than our service providers.
It's been really good. And I meant to say that the VEAP presentation, we all gave major kudos to. It was very impressive on the veteran activity. And the on the job training, we saw some good progress there. So I think maybe it's just our committee. Maybe we're spending so much time on these detailed reports, which we're not really making, feel like it's the same message each time, doesn't really change. And then we're not getting to these positive things that maybe need a little more time getting some kudos. And I don't know how, is maybe that's not in these committees. I don't know how we start to turn the ship and move more toward the virtual. I mean, we keep saying it, but I don't know how we make that happen.
So Barbara, just to share with you, in our recent procurement for the Title I Career Services, the service provider that was nominated or selected by that review committee heavily focused on virtual services. Like,
okay, good.
Yeah. So I'll send you guys a link to their site so you can just kind of look over it. They're all over the United States. They offer it either virtually for Workforce Systems or both. In our case, they're offering it virtually and face-to-face so that a participant can sit at home at 3 o'clock in the morning and go to trainings. Yeah. So I think that we're working towards more of that. And then, like I said, we're still trying to build that virtual one-stop. So I'm still working really hard to get the approval of that, building a platform so we can have a virtual one-stop. But this service provider does have a platform to do training and engagement with customers virtually from the training part from home. It's just not the full one-stop platform, just the training part of it. But it's a good start.
That is a good start. And so I think what you're saying is in the next procurement cycles, you're going to start to roll some of that in.
I think we need to. I don't think that we can ask the service provider to any longer just work one side. They have to have a solution for both.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't have any questions. Any questions, John?
No, no questions here.
Great. All right. Okay, let's move on to, are we ready for the grant matrix?
Yes. Okay. So for the grant matrix, I'm just going to highlight just kind of like some of the major talking points. So we've got some grants coming down the pipeline that we're applying for. We still have that $3 million grant from the Department of Labor for Careers. We've not gotten that grant off the ground yet. It was second grant on there, the $3 million for the dislocated workers. We're still working on all the procurements required to make that grant work. We also received $3.9 million from the governor's office for micro businesses. So right now we're providing micro businesses in Orange County the opportunity to apply for grants for $2,500 to help out their business. When we talk about micro businesses, it is employers that have five or fewer employees that made less than $50,000 in gross revenues in 2019, and that are minorities. So they could be a minority owned, women owned, veteran owned, English language learners, undocumented, essentially those mom and pops, Uber drivers, those organizations that didn't necessarily qualify for some of those PPE loans and some of those other opportunities that were out there because of COVID. This is an opportunity for them to receive support. So we have started that grant process. We had the first round where we received 1,700 applications. Unfortunately, there were quite a few of them that didn't qualify that applied. So we had to go out and do another relaunch of it. And we just did that on May 9th. So we're taking applications as we speak right now. To create funding opportunities available to micro businesses in Orange County. So those are the two kind of updates. Let me scroll down to the bottom, Desiree, to the last page. Yes, okay, there we go. So then in the pipeline, we've got the $25 million Good Jobs Challenge that we're still waiting to hear back on. We've got the STEPS grant, which I just received a notice that we did get that one. So we're still working out with the state how much. So that's a grant to support youth with disabilities to provide them summer job opportunities. We partnered with Goodwill last time and we successfully performed. And so we'll likely be partnering with Goodwill again to provide youth with the opportunity, just youth with disabilities, the opportunity to obtain employment. And then the last one is the Regional Equity Recovery Partnership grant for $1.3 million. We're in the process, we just submitted that grant application. We're waiting to hear back from the state, but that's gonna allow us to continue to do regional work where we're partnered with Santa Ana, Anaheim, and our workforce board to provide streamlined program service delivery, but engage with employers and community colleges to develop programs. Any questions or concerns about the grant matrix?
No, I just think with that Good Jobs Challenge grant, everybody applied for that is what I'm learning. And so they're waiting to hear back. It's going to be interesting to see how they go about selecting the awardees to that grant.
I think there was 500 applicants, which is a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, Yeah, 500, over 500 applicants. And I think they only intended to give it out to like maybe 30 or 40. Yeah. There's another grant coming down the pipeline. It's called SERF. It's the Community Economic Resiliency Fund. I think I said that right. That is another economic development related grant that really would support some of our regional work. We're trying to explore that opportunity and possible partnerships for that grant. We have had the governor's office come out because I think I've shared with you, we've had some challenges in previous grants where some local people compete with us against it when they probably should collaborate. And so this time around, we've asked the governor's office to come out and talk to some of our stakeholders in the community to talk about why you should partner with us and not necessarily compete with us, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's gonna happen. I do know that for the SERP grant, OCDC plans to go after it. But we're thinking about going after it. So it's kind of creating a little bit of a challenge. Hopefully this conversation with the governor's office will help people to see why they should partner with this versus compete.
I guess my other question has to do with community-based organizations out there that are, you know, working to support individuals through whatever transition that you might be going through. Do you feel that we have sufficiently connected with those organizations, or is there still work to be done?
There's still work to be done. What right now I'm working on writing our MOU and infrastructure agreement. And the way I'm trying to do it is I'm trying to put everybody in our sandbox to be a part of our one-stop system, right? So mm-hmm. I've had lots of meetings where I'm trying to convince people, please be a part of my MOU. Here's how you benefit from it. Please take a seat at the table, whether you co-locate in the One Stop Center or not, be a part of this agreement so that you can be a part of the system and we're all working together to serve people. I'm having this conversation. People are still struggling to figure out why partner. And I'm like, I've told you why to partner. There's so many benefits in partner. There's so much more that you can do for your clients by partnering with us. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's still a lot of work in the community. I even have asked chambers to partner with us because it only makes sense if we're doing business services, we can support businesses. So you need to partner with us, right? But not everybody comes to the table. Like I can send you an invitation. I can tell you why you should come. You still don't come.
Right.
And then later on, when you find out what I did for another chamber, then you're upset because you didn't come and now you want to join. And the issue with the MOU agreement is I don't want to write those every 6 months because remember the MOU agreement has to be signed by all the partners, signed by the Workforce Development Board, and then signed by the Board of Supervisors, go up to the state and then go to DOL. That's a lot of work for partners to come late to the party.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what triggered that question is, and I don't know if you've met with the president of the Orange County Food Bank yet.
Oh, yeah, no.
Right. Yeah. So I met with him. He said he was scheduled to meet with you, actually.
Okay.
So I attended their open house and I wanted to know if they had any kind of partnership with a workforce development board. And apparently, I believe it's Anaheim that's mm-hmm. partnering with them. So just it sort of, you know, prompted me to think about other opportunities out there because we know that they exist, these community-based organizations. So it seems like it would make a lot of sense to connect with them.
Absolutely. And that's where I need this board to help me with that. Because remember, I'm new to Orange County. I don't know everybody, right? And sometimes you guys get out there and meet people. And by you doing that, now I have this meeting with him. That helps me to extend our service delivery when you make that introduction. That's one of the things that the board members are supposed to do is help me connect with people and sell what we do to those individuals. So I do need more of that because I am, like I said, I'm kind of behind in the race. Because I don't have those relationships. And then we still have some of those territorial problems that if they're based in Orange, like Santa Ana or Anaheim, how do I make sure that I'm not stepping on their toes, but still engaging with the organizations that I need to be a part of my sandbox?
Right. So where does it make sense in terms of our structure to have those discussions, the brainstorming type discussions? Is it best at the committee level or should we create some space within the full board meeting or the executive board meeting?
I think that because the committee meetings are so packed with information, it's too hard to get to that, right? But okay. If there could be like an initiative committee or ad hoc committee that works on initiatives and kind of help expand how we do stuff, I think that might help. I can tell you that I can't add another thing to that one-stop committee or that youth committee because we'll never get anything done, right? But maybe there's an initiative committee that kind of helps with that expansion and anything like that, that expansion and being innovative, or innovation committee. I don't know, but I do think that there is a need for it. I just don't think there's enough space on these existing committees to tackle that, as well as working on the performance and so forth. I do need those committees to address performance. That's a major component of the role for this board, is oversight, right? And so if we're not addressing performance and we're not addressing challenges with this board, then you're not providing oversight, right? Because mm-hmm. you don't know what's wrong. So I need to keep that oversight with this board, but then it would be great if there was an innovation committee or something to kind of help us move things forward.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. I was just trying to not create a new committee. I was hoping that we could absorb it somehow on the agenda, either on the full, the more people from the various sectors, I think the better, to brainstorm on this. So that's why I was thinking the larger full board meeting.
Maybe the full board for right. 10 minutes or something each time.
Right.
It's not a one-time thing. You have to keep revisiting it. Mm-hmm. But I agree, the committees are packed full.
Yeah.
Or maybe when we do strategic planning sessions, maybe we have it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Maybe it's more of those, because you don't have time to really address it with these committee meetings. But maybe if I set up quarterly strategic planning sessions, that's where you guys can get in the weeds and say, okay, Carmen, here's some work that I'd like for you to work on, or things that I want. Maybe it's that. The full board, the only concern I have by that is that, okay, the full board, most people want to be off by a certain time, right? They don't want it to go over. And sometimes it will go over if we're talking about, we're getting in the middle of something that's really important to this board and you really want to dive into it. I don't know what that would mean if it took the board meeting a little longer than where it already is. There's a lot of information covered in our board meeting.
So we could talk about this offline, but
if
there's a way that we can sort of condense some of the other sections to allow enough time to talk about some of these more, innovative type strategies, because I think we need to somehow incorporate it in that full board meeting.
Okay.
I really don't want it to be just talking heads all the time with, you guys do a great job, but I want to engage the full committee if possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's brainstorm on that, because I'm not really sure. I need you guys to know what these service providers are doing.
Yeah.
So let's brainstorm on that. So what I'll do is kind of brainstorm with you guys individually, come back with a plan.
Okay.
Because I don't know, I haven't figured it out. So I'll take some time and meet with all of you guys individually, and then come to you, Terry, with what I've collected as a possible way to move this work ahead.
Okay. Let's see, where are we? So that would be the grant matrix. Moving on to EDD compliance and audit updates.
So the intent of this is to make sure that you guys are still aware of where we stand with our compliance monitorings and audits. So the orange section are those. Remember, I know you guys probably remember, I had a conversation not too long ago with you guys. It was a long time ago, where we have these open compliance findings and they're cumulative, $2 million. And so I wanted to highlight that EDD is still evaluating those challenges that we had back from 2016 through 2018 with our procurement processes and our funding and so forth. So those audits are still open. Mm-hmm. Now, what I wanted to share with you is that in the green section, these are audits that have happened 2018 and after on our programs. And as you can see, we hadn't had any compliance findings or observations on any of those. And it's because of all those policies that we put into place to kind of get our things in order to avoid some of the compliance findings we have in that orange section. So I really want to say that this board has done a great job of getting these policies in place to avoid compliance findings. That blue section is the fiscal monitoring of our service providers for 2019 through 2022. When the pandemic happened, our fiscal monitors weren't necessarily going out because, of course, they couldn't. And so they're picking it back up to go back out and do fiscal reviews of all of our contracts. And then the gray section is program monitoring reviews. So the programming department is going out to review all of our service providers' program activities So what I wanted to do is just kind of let you know where we stand in going out, monitoring our service providers, where we are with us being monitored, kind of giving you a high level report. Moving forward, I'll try to give you a little bit more details to tell you how many observations, how many findings, so that way you're aware of it. But I just wanted you to know that we are conducting compliance observations and reviews with our service providers, and they are being conducted on us. And like us recently, we've been doing pretty good. We're still waiting for all of those old ones to get resolved. And it's essentially waiting on EDD to continue to review all the activity.
Okay, great. Okay, well, thank you for the update.
And that's all I have.
Okay. As far as the discussion item from me, I think, you know, and Karma, we talked about this before. I think at some point, and I don't know how we're going to work it into the agenda, knowing that, you know, understanding how packed these are, but I think that the full board needs to have some education on this board of supervisors, who they are, you know, background, you know, voting record.
That would be good.
How do we engage them, you know? So I think that's a blind spot for me, and I don't know about others, but it sounds like we're going to need to engage with them at some point. And how do we go about doing that? Who are they? You know, what's important to them? What's not important to them? Yeah.
Okay. And there could be some changes there in November, right? With the election, there might be some changes.
There could. So I went back to county council with your request. Mm-hmm. And I talked to leadership about the request. And so there's two different methodologies that we talked about. So there are other advisory committees that are throughout the county that have an opportunity to go to the Board of Supervisors meetings. So like on a Tuesday, actually physically showing up to the Board of Supervisor meeting and giving a report out, right? So there's that opportunity, but that's a public venue, right? The other thing I offered or was talking about with leadership is there an opportunity for you guys to meet with each supervisor individually, quarterly or semi-annually, to just kind of go through things. So what I wanted to propose is to send you a Board of Supervisor meeting where another one of the committees has gone up there and see if that's what you're interested in, so you can see what I'm talking about. Or would you prefer to have that face-to-face? Now, the issue is showing up. So if you get this on the agenda and you meet with all five of them, you guys have to show up to all five of those meetings that you established. So I guess it depends on how you guys want to handle it. Do you want to just go in front of the five at one time, or do you want to meet with them individually?
Right. Yeah. And let me add to that. So the context in my head, based on what I learned from, you know, the conference, is that, you know, we can't assume that the Board of Supervisors really understand our role. And based on what you called out in the regulations, there is sort of a fine line between our shared responsibilities between the Workforce Development Board and the Board of Supervisors. I'm not sure that we're in agreement with what our roles and responsibilities are. So we've got to strategize and get our plan together first on what messages we want to send to them, because I think that's where we need to start first, is developing that strat. What is our communication plan versus us just going to the committee and talking to them?
So I did ask County Council to help us draft an agreement between the Workforce Development Board and the Board of Supervisors. There are other, I just talked to two other workforce boards that have it. Mm-hmm. So I did send him some samples, because at the time that I talked to County Council, I didn't know of any workforce area immediately that had this agreement in place that's like ours. Mm-hmm. So I found one from two other states, this agreement that kind of outlines, this is what the Board of Supervisors does, this is what the Workforce Development Board does, here's what happens if you don't agree. So if you don't agree, there is something in the law that says it goes up to the governor. So if you have a situation where maybe you voted on something and the Board of Supervisors went against it, you guys can't come to an agreement, then it goes up to the governor's office. So I did ask County Council to to take a look at this agreement between the Workforce Board and the Board of Supervisors, identifying the roles and responsibilities of each. So hopefully I'll circle back with him to see where he is with drafting something. Mm-hmm. But I did say that we needed that first, because it does outline in the law there's supposed to be one. And it's not the bylaws. So I think originally they thought the bylaws was enough. The bylaws doesn't address the communication or the role of the Workforce Board versus the supervisor, and it's not an agreement, it's a bylaw. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting for county council to get back to me, but I did send him some samples.
Great, great. Barbara and John, does that make sense, what we're looking to do?
Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit behind in this conversation. I don't think I've been involved in it, but I've been on the board for a while, and I've always, the board just has always kind of been an advisory board. You know, it seems like the Board of Supervisors is the controlling entity. We make recommendations that don't really have any authority. I mean, I know when there was that big issue a while back, the board was really kept in the dark as to anything that was going on or what had happened or why there was a change in leadership. I mean, Barbara, I don't know if you remember way back when.
Oh, I do. It was a challenging few years there until they got it. There seemed to be a lack of clarity on actual authority of the board, which I think Karma's done a great job of coming in and re-going through all of our policy documents, all of our, you know, charters, and re-establishing what the board's role is.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, that whole episode really highlighted to me the board really has no authority.
People thought we did. There was a lot of misunderstanding there.
Yeah. So Barbara, you do. So the law says you're partners. So that's what Terry's getting at. So Terry had a conversation. We had a conversation with EDD about the role of the Workforce Board versus the Board of Supervisors. So Terry and Annalisa were on that call. Mm-hmm. And so the Workforce Development Board and the Board of Supervisors are partners. They're not.
Okay, well, I think we went from thinking we had authority to thinking we have absolutely no authority. So we may need to re-educate folks that it sounds like we may have some authority.
You have some authority. So you have some responsibilities and some authority. And so what we talked about doing as a result of that call is establishing a agreement. So it's very clear that this is the role of the Workforce Development Board as it pertains to the law. And this is the role of the Board of Supervisors as it pertains to the law. And here's what happens when there's a disagreement between the two, because I don't think you guys knew what you could do if you disagreed with activities. Mm-hmm.
We thought that they were, superior to us, and they basically would overrule us.
No, you go to the governor. So there's a process. There's a process when the Workforce Development Board and the Board of Supervisors don't agree, then there's a process that it goes up all the way to the governor's level.
I think most on the board would be quite surprised to hear that.
It's in the law.
Yeah. I mean, I think they would be surprised too, because Karma, you work for the county, and, you know, the county council would be, you know, essentially providing advice to both entities, you know, the Board of Supervisors and us. And I would think that they would have more of a, obviously, an allegiance to the Board of Supervisors. But I mean, theoretically, there shouldn't be any disagreements. I mean, we're working aligned. Yeah, we should be aligned. I mean,
we should be aligned.
I've been involved for over a decade, and there hasn't been really any significant disagreements.
And we've worked well.
I think that was questionable was when things went sideways, the board was kept in complete, you know, darkness as to kind of what happened, why did the leadership change, what happened. I mean, obviously there was some audit related issue regarding some procurement stuff, and then we know that much, but other than that, I mean, the whole leadership change, it was just kind of like, well, what are we here for if we can't be involved in some of these discussions even as to what's happening?
There is that, but then there's also, you're supposed to connect with them. So there should be an opportunity for you to at least meet with them annually and just kind of come together and say, okay, this is what we're going to focus on moving forward. Like, there should be at least once a year a conversation with them, if not more frequently. And so that conversation can either be in front of all five of them at an actual meeting, Board of Supervisor meeting, or it could be a session of meetings that you hold individually with them. I don't know what makes more sense for this workforce board and the board of supervisors, because of course they've got to agree too to how frequently they meet you, right?
Yeah.
But I agree with Terry. The first step is to establish that MOU agreement between the two.
Yeah.
That says, this is what we do. This is what we do according to the law. Here's how we come together. And here's that due process when we don't agree of how we handle disagreements between these two.
Because it seems like our interaction has been limited to if they come to a job fair in their district.
Right.
Then they'll come to the front end of a job fair, make some remarks and leave. And that's been about it from what I can see.
Right.
I don't know if any of their staff come and sit in the board meetings or, you know, if there's any of that going on.
Occasionally. But they're not. So let me just say that they don't necessarily have to, because the whole board meeting, they're supposed to trust that you have the best interest of this community and you're representing the work of this community, and anything that's an issue that you bring it to them.
So
I am working on that, Terry. I'll circle back with County Council to see where he is with those documents. I also know that I have to change the bylaws. So I do have an open monitoring with EDD that they called out that there is a challenge with my bylaws because I don't have proxy in them. Hard process, because long story, but a hard process with proxy, because you have to be appointed to this board in order to make votes on this board. So how do you proxy somebody else in to vote who's not been a part of these meetings and don't know what we do? So there's some work that I have to clean up. So we will be revising the bylaws, and I will be presenting them to you. And Renee has asked County Council to review the bylaws with you as well as the Brown Act with you. So in the future meeting, those two items will be reviewed.
Okay.
It's interesting. I wonder how is the relationship or understanding with the Anaheim and Santa Ana Workforce Boards and the county?
I don't know that they have a relationship, because Santa Ana's city and Anaheim
city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They get their funding separately. It doesn't even run through the county.
Yeah.
So their city.
So it could be some silos where we really all need to be working together.
I agree.
Got it. All right. So we have a lot to do in that area. Anything from you, Karma? Anything else?
Yeah, so I had planned on having we met and had the strategic planning session. I had planned on that this upcoming meeting that our strategic planning materials will be reviewed. Unfortunately, our third party contractor took ill and couldn't deliver the strategic planning on time. And remember, once he delivered it, I had to put it out for public comment. It's out now for public comment. You guys can go out there and review what he's written, right?
Okay.
But I can't meet on it or discuss it until the public comment period is over. So after the public comment period is over, I will be asking him to come back and present it to the board. And then you guys make a vote if this is what you want to approve or any change you want to make to it. So I want to bring that to your attention. I also want to bring to your attention, it's likely that I'm going to have to ask Terry to call a special meeting to review the MOU and infrastructure agreement. So the MOU and infrastructure agreement are due in June. We are currently working with all of our community partners to develop an agreement where we all are playing together in the sandbox, and those who are going to co-locate identify that they're going to co-locate and how, right? It's due to the state in June. I was kind of holding out for the South County location so I wouldn't have to write it twice. It's not going to happen fast enough. So I'm going to have to ask Terry to call a special meeting probably in June, probably early to mid-June to review the MOU and infrastructure agreement. But first I have to get all the partners to sign it. So once I get all the partners assigned, then I'll be reaching out to Terry to schedule a special board meeting to review the MOU and infrastructure agreement. So I just want to put that on your radar that's likely to happen.
Yeah, that's fine.
Do you get many public comments when you put things out for public comment? Do you get many?
It depends. So it's funny. Sometimes we do. It just depends. I think it depends on where the world is at that time, how much, you know. It just depends. When we did the regional plan and local plan, we got a couple of comments, right? But there's other things that we put out there, we get no comments at all. So,
but are they comments from the public, or are they comments from service providers and people that are sort of in the business?
Both. Oh, okay. We posted in the newspaper, so we have to put it in the newspaper.
That's good.
And then post it open to the public and post at the board of supervisor level and on our website. So it's posted everywhere.
That's good.
It just depends, like I said, it depends on what's going on in the world. So if nothing else is going on in the world and people find out we got something out there, then they chime in.
All right. So I think, was that the last item?
That was.
Okay. All right. Well, good conversation. Good meeting. So meeting adjourned. Thank you all. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, John. Thank you, Karma. Thank you, Desiree. Thank you. And we will be on the lookout, you know, for, you know, future meeting invites. So meeting adjourned. Have a great day.
Bye.
Thank you.